Hello and welcome to the Fitness Mindset podcast with Kate Newdecker. On this episode, I was joined by Yanis Fleming. Yanis is a nutrition coach for high-level MMA athletes and he helps fighters make weight for fights. He has a wealth of knowledge in the area and also he coaches members of the general public and helps them to achieve their fat loss goals. Yanis has been on the podcast before, so I decided to ask him to come back on again and talk specifically about the differences between coaching members of the general public and coaching fighters. I really hope you enjoy listening. So Yanis, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast again. Yanis came onto the podcast a year ago and we talked about fat loss and Slimming World. But Yanis, if you can give like a little bit of a background to the listeners today, that would be awesome.
Yeah, sure. So thanks for having me, Kate. My name is Yanis Fleming. I am the lead coach, if you like, at Mr. Sport. It's a persona I've been developing for a while online. It's just like a no BS approach to weight loss and dieting and fitness. But my primary job is I work with athletes in the sport of MMA or in weight regulated sports. So your wrestlers, your boxers, mixed martial artists, any sport where they have to meet a weight threshold. And my job is to obviously help with their nutrition, helping them diet down and get into that weight that they need to be to compete. But not just at the weight, but fit and healthy as well. So, yeah, that's a little summary of who I am.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Yanis. Yeah, it's exactly why I asked Yanis onto the podcast today, because I think MMA is such an interesting sport in terms in relation to nutrition, because you do have to make weight and it is incredibly different to nutrition for the general public. And you have to then decipher yourself exactly what kind of evidence in terms of the research that's out there for athletes, does that apply to athletes or can you use some of your experience working with the general public? So I think just to kind of sum that up, what kind of things are you thinking about when you're training someone, when you're coaching someone who's just looking for fat loss, a member of the general public, just want to train up a bit, wants to drop a dress size, and then you're switching maybe the same day to coaching an athlete, an MMA athlete. How are you switching between those two mindsets?
Yeah, I mean, the most difficult part is that while a lot of my athletes do want to lose weight, so it's very similar to the general public because they need to, as I said, meet a weight threshold. Mm-hmm. The difficult bit is that you also want to fuel them for performance. So while you might have someone who's got a sedentary lifestyle, they're not moving much, you may try and maintain their exact lifestyle and just reduce portions, so it's sustainable. Mm-hmm. For an athlete, you've got that, but you've also got to do it in very minute amounts. You've got to make sure that they do stay on track because obviously, because it is such small amounts, you know, these marginal gains here, if marginal deficits, sorry. So if you are not sticking to it, you end up, you know, having to play catch up. Mm-hmm. And another thing as well is some of these athletes have terrible diets. Mm-hmm. The sport of MMA is quite a young sport. It was cage fighting before that. Mm-hmm. So there's not a massive background in sports science. So you end up having to include new foods, you know, foods that they're not really keen on necessarily, a lot of vegetables and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's fueling for performance, but also you've got that energy deficit. That's the main sort of difference, I think. It can be tricky.
And I'm sure you're kind of breaking into a field that, like you say, it's still a new sport. So there's going to be some kind of old sport ideas there with some athletes that you might have to overcome. So, for example, a lot of the water cutting, for example, too much emphasis on the water cutting, getting ready to make weight. You know more about this area than me. So what kind of things are you helping people with, athletes with, when they have old ideas and say, like, I'm going to have to drop this much water weight, when potentially, I'm assuming your approach would be, okay, let's actually drop a bit more fat before the date, before the match. How are you getting round people and getting them round to that new idea?
It can be a little bit tricky, especially when you've got fighters who are used to eating massive meals and then saying, you know, I cut 20 to 30 pounds in fight week. Mm-hmm. And I that's all I've ever done. Mm-hmm. So to go from, you know, a week of stress, extreme stress, to having 2 months of, you know, getting their diet on lock, It can be a little bit of a tricky situation because a lot of fighters think, do you know what, I just want to eat what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, getting all these different misconceptions, now it's weird because obviously, you know, in our industry, pseudoscience has been around for a while, all these myths and all this nonsense. Well, it's just come to MMA now, so every Tom, Dick and Harry's jumping on a vegan diet, they're cutting, or they're going keto, cutting out carbs. And as an athlete, it's actually even worse because while it's not sustainable for the general public, for a lot of them, as an athlete for performance, it's not ideal.
It's tricky, that's the thing. And I just was speaking to someone yesterday and they were like, I actually want to move towards a vegan diet. And you have to be incredibly unbiased in the things you present to them. Like, that's fine if you have those ethical reasons for doing it, but the implications are that you're going to have more time organizing this so that you're not deficient in B12, so that you are getting a good spectrum of all the amino acids, for example. And from your point of view, it's just even more work, isn't it?
Especially when you know the athlete. And I try to get to know all my athletes on a personal level. I find it much easier to coach them when you know them and you're a bit more relatable. But when you know this person, you know that they don't stick to diets and they tell you they want to go vegan and you're sat there thinking, if this was for an ethical reason, great. But, you know, you're just following the next trend for 2 weeks and then I'm going to have to change it again.
Exactly. And that's the point. Like, you're really unbiased with that and that. You know, it's not that it's you're against vegan diets as a whole. It's that you know exactly how difficult that can be in terms of performance for an athlete. But like you say, ethical reasons completely behind that, completely fine. When it's a fad and it's pseudoscience and people are saying, okay, we don't have to count calories, we just have to eat clean before a fight, then that must be another thing that comes into it.
That's another one.
Like, I saw it in Ultimate Fighter and they were just going, like, this guy was like, he had like a burger or something, and then like everyone was going, wow, are you eating clean? Oh man, like, and yeah, okay, to an extent that's going to be quite calorific, it's not very nutrient dense, but because the emphasis was on it's just got to be clean the whole time, that's kind of like, again, it's like that kind of pseudoscience. But then is that actually something that's more relevant maybe for athletes? Because foods that aren't in quotation marks clean, so foods that are higher in salt, for example, higher in carbohydrate, that is actually going to have a bit of manipulation towards the water weight that they carry. Is that something that you have to be a little bit more strict upon with MMA athletes, like salt content?
Yeah, you do. I was actually going to say. So I think this whole clean, I mean, I don't like the term, but in the context of eating clean, I think it right after the weigh-in, obviously in the lead-up, there's a bit of sodium manipulation, so you are manipulating certain amounts of seasonings that they're using and smoked meats, for example, and carbohydrates as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think right after the weigh-in, probably the last thing you do want to do is consume something which I suppose is considered dirty, a burger, because it's covered in salt. It's all this stuff. You've gone from almost starving yourself to suddenly having this influx of highly salted foods. So I think in that context, as an athlete, it works. But for the general public, this whole, you know, clean and dirty, it's just, there's more, you know, there's food you eat more of and food you eat less of. That's how I should think of it.
That's the thing as well, like, because I'm used to working with the general public, so I watch something like Ultimate Fighter with a nutritionist being like, it's got to all be clean, and I'm like, no, not necessarily. But then also, it's not my field. I'm studying the field of working with athletes, but I don't have experience working with athletes. So it's very different to hear it from another perspective. So, okay, cool. I find that really interesting. You've recently been working with a female MMA athlete. And have you found any differences between making weight for a female athlete and then making weight for a male athlete?
I mean the main ones, we'll go for psychologically then physiologically.
Yeah.
I think female athletes, I work with a few, but I think you're referring to Olga, aren't you, who's fighting for the Bellator title. So female athletes tend to be so much more organized. They just seem to they seem to be more focused, they seem to be a little bit more honest with what they've eaten.
Funny,
Oh, I'm letting the bros down with this one, aren't I? But yeah, they do tend to be a little bit more organised up here. Mm-hmm. But in terms of physiology, the whole women's makeup, their physiological code is to survive and to produce life. So absolutely. When you do cut things like sodium, or even with Olga, when she went on her flight I think it was Israel to the US, she experienced a bit of water retention. And to be honest, it was a hurdle that I've experienced, but not mm-hmm. to that extent. You know, she went a good day or two without losing anything. And as I said, when you've got these marginal sort of progressions, it starts to worry when you have a few days with nothing going on. And also as well, you know, the BMR, things do vary, but hormones and whatnot can also cause a bit of water retention. It mainly is just the retention of water. I don't think there's anything to do with their inability to burn energy the same, you know.
That's really interesting, actually, because I can imagine in a stressful week, in that run-up to fight week, a woman might be quite stressed, so therefore they will have elevated cortisol that will mean that they retain a little bit more fluid, and that would probably have... It could mess with your head a little bit. If you literally got that few days away, you know you're being completely on point and completely organised with your nutrition, and you're not seeing it move. In the same way, that can be a similarity to, for example, general public, where they're like, my scale weight isn't moving, what the hell's going on? I'm working really hard, this sucks, it doesn't work. So it's kind of like, that's one of the things that are the same, but there's many more differences. And with the deficit that you're making with your female athletes, are you sometimes thinking, I'm going to make this deficit a little bit smaller for this female athlete just because of your experience working with the general public, you know, that might be more sustainable, or do you not do that?
It's weird because it's smaller than in comparison to the general public, but in comparison to the male athletes, it's actually a little bit higher. Because I found that when we do the VO2 max and when we test all, you know, their BMR, the males tend to be burning. Also, some guys like Nathaniel, Nathaniel Wood, who's in the UFC, he's about 70 kilos when he's out of camp. He's burning upwards of 3,000 calories a day, even more. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone like Olga, for example, is still sitting around 2.6, 2.7. The deficit is a little bit larger, only because there is that added worry of, you know, is the weight going to come off? Are they perhaps under-tracking or underestimating what they're eating? I think there's a difference between general public, but with the male athletes tend to have a higher BMR, much higher BMR.
Absolutely, And would you say that's in relation to muscle mass? Obviously, increased muscle mass, that must make the cut a lot easier in terms of making weight, getting there a little bit quicker?
This is where the term weight cut derived from. So weight cut is actually just taking water out of the muscle. So you know you've got glycogen, you've got water in the muscle. That's essentially what you're cutting. Mm-hmm. And this is another, like you said, misconception you get with some of the fighters is 4 weeks out from their fight, they're cutting out carbohydrates because they're worrying about their weight. And it's just the wrong type of weight. You know, this is short-term weight. And that's what you want to save at the end. That's for the cut. You know, the final week is when you're taper down carbohydrates. If they need to cut loads, a moderate amount, you'll taper down sodium. And then you use passive sweating methods like sauna or hot bath. Muscle tends to, this is why the lower weight class is, obviously higher weight class like heavyweight you wouldn't have to cut, but most of my job is actually working with the lower weight classes, so your bantamweights, your lightweights, your featherweights, all the way up to welterweight, really, and this is because they have much lower body fat percentage but much higher lean mass, and that means you can draw more water out, so
makes your job a little bit easier, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, in the, you can pull a bit more water out, but it's not easier for them.
It's super easy, all that weight cutting, so basically, you're working with people, you're working with such minute kind of details with people, kind of making sure that they don't veer off either side of, for example, the macronutrients, the calories, too much. Do you ever have experience with athletes that potentially quite like to party, quite like to, you know, go out on a night out and then have a lot of alcohol, maybe go off their diet? How do you then get them back on track, essentially? How do you make accommodate people like that?
Well, my WhatsApp, if you saw my WhatsApp, it is insane because, this is one of the reasons I'm quite, I'm around all the time. And when you have fighters in the US, it means nighttime is contacting them as well. So the voice notes and messages are, can I eat this? Can I do that? Yeah. And fighters outside of camp are renowned to be for being binge eaters.
Yeah.
So they'll restrict for so long. They'll, train and eat like an athlete. That when they're out of camp, they just want to eat everything.
Absolutely.
I do try to have a bit of a balanced approach. Obviously, we keep on top of their weight, so there's regular check-ins with their weight to make sure they're not, going 20 kilos above the fight weight.
Yeah.
But, I'm quite relaxed. You know what I'm like, Kate?
Yeah.
If you want to have some drinks outside of camp, that's fine. I can accommodate that.
Yeah.
But it does make it a bit more of a task when you've got hundreds of these fighters contacting you.
I bet
for twinks.
It's difficult in terms of like having that kind of like, you want to have that relationship with the athlete so you know that they can be honest with you. But to what point do you then go, nah, mate, you can't have 6 Jaeger bombs and expect to like be the same mate the next morning? It's kind of like having the trust, but having the discipline as well, which must be quite difficult. Cool. You mentioned something there about how binge eating can be quite common in terms of athletes that are making weight afterwards. They've made weight, they've cut their calories quite low. It's something that's quite prevalent in bodybuilding competitions and particularly with females. How does that, do you ever have people come to you that come to you and say, in quotation marks, my metabolism is broken, it's fucked, I need you to help me get it back to normal so we can get the calories back up, it's easier to cut weight. Do you ever have people like that, instances like that at all?
Sometimes. I mean, it sounds weird because they do binge more and restrict more. They have this one or the other, this all or nothing, but...
Yeah.
When you tell them what to do, they are actually relatively consistent. And I believe that this is because they have a goal in mind. You know, when you know you're going out there, you're getting paid, you're fighting in front of your friends and family, you sort of have that adherence factor.
Yeah.
Whereas, obviously, the general public, it's a little bit more difficult to say no to a burger and, burger and fries with your mates when there isn't potentially an end goal or an end result. But you do get a lot of fighters get in touch and they say, oh, I've been trying to cut weight for ages, and you find out, what's your carbohydrates like?
Yeah.
And they say, oh, well, I'm 8 weeks out from my fight. I'm on 75 grams of carbs a day. I'm on a 1,500 calorie diet. And you're like, what? How are you performing?
Yeah, exactly. How are they going to perform on that, the response your body must have to it is going to be naturally to want to slow things down to keep you alive. In that much of a deficit, they're not going to be performing. So with that in mind, would you say it's better for an athlete to be losing more fat towards a fight, or in terms of performance this is, or and being more hydrated, or cutting more water and losing less fat? In terms of performance, which is going to be better for them?
That's a really tough question because there's two scenarios here. I take the approach where we diet down during camp, only because I really, all of the research, I really don't like the fact that if you cut a shit ton of water weight, by the time it comes to fight night, if you haven't fully hydrated, you're going in there with a dehydrated brain, which isn't great if you're getting punched in the head.
Absolutely.
When you have fighters cutting, doing this process 5 times a year, that's leading to kidney damage. 5-10 years down the line, that's guaranteed kidney damage.
Yeah.
So you really want to try and limit how much water they're cutting, because the refuel, the reload, the rehydration, if it's not on point, you've not got a healthy person going in there.
Yeah.
However, you could critique my approach and say that putting someone in an energy deficit during fight camp when they need that energy in order to perform and get better and get that 1%, that marginal gain over their opponent, isn't really ideal either. So it really depends on the athlete.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it depends on their bodies as well, because some guys like Fabian Edwards, who I have fights for Bellator, he just has top 1% genetics. You know, he can come in on fight week with 15 pounds to lose and you can pull that out of him in 3 days.
Yeah.
And then you get someone like Nathaniel who physically finds it difficult to sweat. He'll sit in a sauna and he won't sweat.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, cool.
It does depend. But I prefer my approach just because you get to know your fighters a bit more. They learn more. So then whether or not they use me for the next camp, they know about calories, macros, when to taper things down.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other approach, in my opinion, you know, it relies too much on the coach. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're 20 pounds above their fight weight and then it comes to fight week and the coach isn't around, they've got 20 pounds and they're not sure how to lose that, you know? So it's cutting it a bit short. And it just means that a few of your guys might miss weight. And I've never had someone miss weight. So I think my approach is best.
I think your approach is best. And it's good that you're doing that and obviously educating athletes so then they can educate more people. You can get rid of more of the pseudoscience that's knocking around and the old school ideas bit by bit, which is only going to be positive for the industry. It's only going to be positive for it. You mentioned there about dealing with being punched in the head when you're severely dehydrated. Is that going to be, if someone's really dehydrated for a fight, is that going to have a knock-on effect to the risk of concussion, for example?
Yeah, for sure. Damage, you know, some of the things you see later down the line, you know, you see like Muhammad Ali with Parkinson's and whatnot, stuff like that just makes it more prevalent when you are fighting with a dehydrated brain.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't get it twisted that a fighter weighing in dehydrated, they should never be fighting in that state.
Yeah.
So, for example, fighters I have that weigh in on the same day, we generally do not cut more than a few pounds, and that can be done just by sitting in the sauna. I mean, you and I could sit in the sauna right now and we'd lose a few pounds. So that's, you know, we leave it at that amount.
Yeah.
Because it's more about the window of opportunity to rehydrate. If you don't have a 24-hour plus window, you really shouldn't be cutting much in water.
Yeah.
For that reason, that you're going in there, damaged kidneys, you know, dehydrated brain, which makes it easier to get knocked out, and that's just not ideal.
So. Yeah, and it's important that it's kept a safe sport, you know. It's important that you're doing that to ensure the safety of athletes because they want to have long careers. So that's only going to be beneficial for the industry as well. Just going back to work, the differences between working with general public and working with athletes. Now, working with general public, when people ask about, for example, their carb to fat ratio, for example, and we say, okay, it's more actually about the energy deficit you create in terms of the calories, the deficit for fat loss, for example. Now, however, for performance goals, if you had an athlete, for example, who was a different type of fighter so that they were very powerful, it was more about short bursts. How would you then, does that have any bearing on macronutrient split, for example, or any bearing on the way that you actually tailor their nutrition?
Not really. Yeah. I think there are like minor changes, minor adjustments. So things like, you know, the supplements they use. So you might have someone, you know, in a long, you know, as you know, in an endurance sport, compared to someone that is in a, you know, high intensity sport, you know, they may go for creatine. You may use things like creatine to help them with their performance. But really, I think it comes down to their strength and conditioning and their recovery. Obviously, as I said, we test their BMR, so we test, you know, we test their energy output as well to make sure that, you know, if you have someone who's a wrestler, just a wrestler, trains 3 times a week and wrestling does nothing else, or you've got an MMA fighter who does striking on a Monday and a Wednesday and a Tuesday and a Thursday, they've got wrestling, their energy demands are going to be very different. Mm-hmm. But in terms of their macro split, no, I think it's proportionally very, very similar. But that is another barrier to my job, is that, you know, with the general public, we always say, as a way of making it easier for them, we say focus on your calories and your protein. With a fighter, you also have to facilitate the fact that they need to know their carbohydrates as well, because that is important for water. So that's another thing that they have to track.
Absolutely, that's another one added that you have to be strict with them. Do you ever do carbohydrate cycling with them then, in terms of in relation to training days, that kind of thing? Train low, then fight high, for example. Is that something that you do ever, or no?
Yeah. So I think, what the sort of strategy we follow is, you know, at the start of camp, we get them on sort of maintenance. A couple of weeks in, we slowly taper things down. Before reducing, I suppose we do reduce calories a little bit more. And then we use carb cycling 2-3 weeks out just to try and bring out a little bit of the excess water.
Yeah.
But it's very, very, it's almost like they don't know the figures. I do it all. So it's things like remove your carbohydrate, remove your, you know, carbohydrate ingredient from lunch and add an extra cup of vegetables. So they're literally having the same volume of food, but for less carbohydrates. So we use methods like that as a way of carb cycling. But yeah, I think it depends because as they get further into camp, training tapers down. So essentially they require less carbohydrates anyway.
Yeah.
Fight week, they'd be doing nothing but chilling really. So they don't require that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So the thing is, what I'm kind of getting from asking the questions about it is actually that it is actually more simple than it's made out to be, and that I had an idea that if you're working with an athlete, there is going to be so many more different modalities into like changing things for people. But actually, you're keeping it quite simple for fighters so that they can essentially learn things for themselves and then become more independent, be empowered, and then like take that to future fights. So is that something that you are looking to do in it with all MMA athletes? Are you trying to make nutrition coaching more prevalent? Because I know before it hasn't, not many fighters been using nutrition coaches, for example. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's more the refuel and the weight cut. So it's more fight week that is where most of my work is. In the lead up to it, most of these fighters, if you get a fighter who wants to talk to you on a sciencey level and they say, look, I want to know how many grams of carbohydrates I'm putting in my body on these days when we are carb cycling, great. But most of them don't want to know. Most of them just want to be told, you know, what to eat. And I think it is a little bit, maybe I'm underselling it there. It's a little bit more complicated. Things like meal frequency, meal timing is a little bit more important, whereas with the general public it's not. Or not as important. But it is fight week when I think the bulk of the science comes into play. So it's just people overcomplicating things, you know.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I think when there is quite a lot of like rumours flying around about when they've got that much pressure on them, they're going to be much more susceptible to like listening to bullshit ideas from maybe like another athlete who said like, oh, make sure you have, for example, I don't know, some ridiculous supplement, which we know that isn't going to be a fat burn, have much more of a fat burning effect. And then they think that this is going to, they put more weight on that, for example, of that working. So, yeah, okay, great. Sounds like what you're doing is really helping athletes at the moment, which is really good. So what's talk to me about the supplement that you've recently brought out. What kinds of supplements are helping athletes in terms of getting ready, cutting weight, and also the refeed process? So talk me through, it's Vigor 8, isn't it?
It is. It's the company I teamed up with to make it is Vigor 8. The product is Rehydrate.
Yeah, okay.
Just playing the word there. They're Vigor 8 with an 8, and now this is Rehydrate.
It's really clever. I see what you did there, yeah.
But I think the main supplements, obviously, you know, the first one, don't really consider it a supplement. It's more of a food, you know, I'm going to say protein powder, and it's more for convenience. But we do include things like creatine 3 to 4 weeks out from camp. Obviously, we will cut it out if the fighter, again, another thing with the females, because of the water retention, creatine, we do generally cut it out.
Of course.
But with fighters who are only cutting a few pounds, we actually leave the creatine in because we think, you know what, it's only going to benefit your performance and you're not cutting enough for us to worry about that water retention.
That's really interesting,
Beta-alanine as well, so 3 grams a day on, you know, intense training days. I don't know, have you tried beta-alanine?
It makes your face tingle, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, I was about to say. Oh, I have some in here. I have some today for the gym, and I'm sort of like, what?
Is it happening now? You've got a tingly face?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? So beta alanine, and obviously when it comes to the cut, there it's not really supplements that are helping with the cut. Obviously there are diuretics, you can get like dandelion root diuretics, but again, that's like when we're talking about cutting the last minute amount. There's things like this sweat cream called Sweet Sweat, so that will just help. So I had a guy who lost a kilo, we put that stuff on him, and for the same time he actually lost 1.6 kilos, so that's almost like 100%, like 60% extra weight loss, so water loss. So then we get to the refuel. Now, as you know, when you lose a lot of water, you lose a lot of electrolytes, so you lose your sodium, your magnesium, all these different electrolytes. So this is what Rehydrate, this is why I wanted to create Rehydrate. So I've got sniffles.
That's alright.
About a year ago, I went to Dublin with a rucksack full of supplements and, you know, big supplements. And the thing is, you can't take a bit out and put it all into a little tub, because fighters will look at that and be like, well, what are you putting in my drinks, bro?
Yeah, cool.
So you turn up with four or five different massive tubs. And in the end, I was just thinking, do you know what? I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to find supplements in these different cities. So I'm going to create my own one. So we created Rehydrate. And it's just the first, I think it's the first initial thing that someone should consume after a weight cut. Because when you've got nothing in the body, no glycogen, no sodium, you've got nothing for the water that you're drinking. You've got nothing for the water you're drinking to hold on to. So you're essentially just flushing straight back out. Now, when you have Rehydrate, it puts, you know, a bit of glucose back in, puts the electrolytes back in. It's giving you that sodium, it's giving you what your body sort of you've depleted your body of.
So
I'm gonna blow my nose.
If you don't do that while you're blowing your nose, it just reminded me of something that I read recently, and that's basically with keeping your athletes healthy in terms of like avoiding colds, and that this is why you sneezing and blowing your nose reminded me of this question, so I'm really pleased you did. So basically, when athletes are getting ready for their fights, they can suffer from low immune system, for example. If you have high cortisol levels, is it right that it suppresses your immune system slightly, so therefore you'd want to actually increase carbohydrate to therefore decrease cortisol when they're training, to therefore raise their immune system? Or have I just imagined something out of nowhere?
I mean, I'm not actually sure. I don't want to talk about something I don't really know about, but I mean, if the science is there, that's something I'm going to start implementing.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I read it somewhere, but I wondered if you read it as well. But yeah.
No, I mean, it's definitely, you're along the right lines in terms of after the weight cut, putting everything back in, sort of leveling out all of these hormones, you know, spiking certain things. You are right in that regard, feeling glycogen stores. But in terms of their immune system, I have no idea.
Give me a little idea there.
Little knowledge bomb there, Kate.
I'll be bringing out something called Vigor Kate. It's high in carbohydrates, electrolytes. I completely thought of it myself. Watch out, Vigor, right? I'm coming for you. Not really. I don't want to be sued. That would be rubbish. So cool. Awesome. So you covered a load of stuff today. So I'll just do some quick fire questions, which I haven't even written down, which I'll just think of. So who would be an MMA athlete that you'd really like to work with?
Do you know what? I genuinely don't think. I think I work with some of the best prospects in the UK. I mean, maybe like a top US fighter. But off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you someone. I like all the guys I'm already working with. And the ones I'm hopefully going to be working with.
Good answer. Good. Who of the top American fighters, for example, I'm talking like top level, since I've only recently started getting into MMA, so I'll probably only recognise some names. Who would you not like to work with? Who would be someone you'd be like, oh my God, they're a bloody nightmare?
There's this guy called Jorge Masvidal, George Masvidal.
Oh, yeah. Is he a bit of a loose cannon?
Yeah, he is. He is. And he, so I work with Fabian Edwards, who is Leon Edwards' brother. And Leon had a bit of a backstage scuffle with the guy. Okay. Now, I don't not like the guy. I think he's quite entertaining. But I just feel like he's persona, the way he carries himself, is just not someone I personally would want to be associated with. But
yeah,
if you're going to air this, make sure George doesn't find out.
I will literally won't put his name in anything. And I won't like hashtag Masvidal or anything like that, don't worry. Just in case. Imagine if you got inquiry off him tomorrow, like, hey, Yanis, I'd really like to work with you. You
probably like, be like, hey, take this down, Blue, take the podcast down.
Would you like to coach him? I'd be like, I don't know. Okay, cool. And in terms of the future of nutrition coaching at MMA, where would you like to see it go in the next few years?
Well, at the moment, there is a lot of accreditations going about. So the first, well, not the first, but the mainstream people who have taken over in the UFC is George Lockhart. I don't know if you know him. So Lockhart and Leith, he's someone that Martin McDonald has destroyed a few times for doing some pseudoscience comments.
Okay, yeah, I know that makes sense now, yeah.
So he's a great guy. Him and Daniel Leith have been helping UFC fighters for years to come, and they're now creating accreditation. So I think what would be great is if there is a qualification in not just nutrition for combat athletes, also weight cutting, you know, weight cutting itself. So you're not just dealing with the macros, the calories, you're also dealing with a little bit more of the electrolytes and tweaking it a little bit more, because I think there's some great nutrition coaches out there. And as I said, honestly, it's most of this, as you know, is just common sense, even for athletes. Mm-hmm. So there are some great nutrition coaches out there doing great things, but a lot of them have no idea what to do when it comes to the weight cut and the refuel. And that can be dangerous, because that's the most important part.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in what I'm studying a sports nutrition diploma, and actually the weight cutting is only covered in regards to jockeys. So you're given like a load of horror stories of like jockeys and the way that they've made weight. However, in terms of something new like MMA, it would actually be kind of different. You know, a jockey isn't going to be as physically active, for example,
as a
fighter. So there's certain things that you can't actually relate. You just have to use common sense, like you say. So it's exciting for you to be one of the first people, essentially, that are going to be taking it forward in terms of more education for MMA athletes in terms of making weight. So that's really cool.
So, even for myself as well, you know, there's, you know, I'm proud to say I'm helping make it a little bit safer for the athletes, but don't get me wrong, there's like 3 papers on PubMed about weight cutting, so it'd be great to actually learn more myself and know a little bit more, because I am at the early stage as well in my own career with this, so it'd be great to see more research being conducted so we can know a little bit more about this. And as you said, even with females, there is a massive difference, certainly in MMA, it'd be good to see what's going on with the female body and the male body, and you know, their differences. So
I absolutely agree with you in that there just isn't enough research in terms of females, for example, and it is a completely different, in terms of hormones, a different ball game. And I think it was like about only like a few years back, and someone said, oh, you know, a female athlete, it's just a smaller man. And
oh my God.
And it was like, damn, do people still think that? Like, so if there was more research in terms of female athletes, the hormones that are affected in terms of, for example, androgen levels in athletes from all sports backgrounds, so female androgen levels that they have, and that's something that's going to be talked about a lot more in the future. But I mean, would you ever conduct research yourself on such things? Would you ever be one of the forefront people who go and find out?
I'd love to. I mean, do you know what? A few years ago, I applied for a PhD in community sport, which is a completely different subject. Mm-hmm. It's like a BA, so it's nothing to do with science.
Yeah.
But do you know what? If I could, I'd love to do, you know, I'd love to do a PhD in something that I can use my athletes in. I can conduct research in on them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so, that's the area that I would love to. Yeah. Be part of, but even if it's not that I'm directly part of it, I'd love to, you know, have an insight into it, so I can at least learn myself.
Of course, exactly. So, it's a field that there isn't much research, so it's kind of open water. So should go for it.
That's it. We should start doing our own research, Kate. You can do the female fighters, I'll do the male ones, and we'll see what happens.
See what happens, exactly. I'll bring out Vigor Kate. It will be fully evidence-based, and I'm excited personally. Well, Yanis, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. It was really, really exciting to have you come back and actually talk about something completely different from what we spoke about before. For anyone that's listening who hasn't listened to Yanis's prior podcast that you did with me, definitely go give it a listen. It's definitely helpful for people who are looking for fat loss. So Yanis, if people want to find you, how can they find you, and what channels can they find you? Social media, for example, how can they find you?
Yeah, so all of my socials are, so Facebook, Twitter and Instagram is at Mr. Sport Official. It looks like it says Mrs. Port Official, but I assure you it's Mr. Sport. And my website is mrsport.org. Thanks again for having me, Kate, for the second time now on this podcast. In the last year, I've actually got my own podcast now, so it'd be amazing to have you on that. And we can talk a little bit more about yourself and you know, get your insight, because you've taught me a lot of knowledge bombs today. So yeah, drop some knowledge bombs.
I would love that. That would be great. It just reminded me. I was like, oh, should I listen to our podcast before we hop on today? And I swear, on the last one, I introduced you as, it's Mr. Sport. And it made you die at the beginning. And I was like, don't think we can do that today. I'll just introduce him as Yanis. He helps MMA athletes. So I think it would be much more normal. So I'm glad I did that. So if anyone wants to listen to the old podcast and the cheesy intro that I used to give to it, then by all means, go ahead. Anyway, it's been awesome having you come on to chat again today. Thank you so much. For everyone that's listening, thank you very much for listening. If you found this helpful, please give it a review, a rating, and please do share. But thank you very much for listening.